Remember the 90s? A time when you could saunter through the metal detector at the airport and keep your jelly shoes on? Maybe you sipped a can of clear Pepsi while sitting down to an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Or you listened to your New Kids on the Block cassette tapes on your Walkman while jumping around in the driveway with your Skip It. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour we'll reminisce and celebrate the unique, sometimes perplexing things that made the 90s the 90s. My guest this hour is Gail Faschingbauer Cooper, entertainment editor for MSNBC.com and co-author of The Totally Sweet 90s, from Clear Cola to Furby and grunge to whatever, the toys, tastes, and trends that defined a decade. Gail, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you for being here. Well, you point out that the 90s marked a decade when certain things started to slip away, seemingly for good, like newspapers and photographic film and all that. But how did you decide what to feature in your collection here?
Well, Brian and I had done one book together before about the 70s and 80s called Whatever Happened to Pudding Pops, and we took kind of the similar approach. We knew we wanted to have a mix of food and toys, and school supplies, TV shows, music, just kind of the general trends, too, that kind of exemplify this decade and the fun things that you might remember or you might have forgotten, whether you intentionally blocked them out or you just completely forgot until you saw a picture of a ring pop in our book or something like that.
Paging through this book was quite a flashback experience, one after another. There were certainly things I forgot all about, like Dunkaroos.
Oh, yes, Dunkaroos. They are a classic little kangaroo-shaped cookie that came with their own little frosting bath that you could dunk them in. And the neat thing about that is a lot of people, that's their favorite 90s food, and they should know that they're not completely gone. You can still get them. One of the things we wanted to do in the book was for every item, and we have like 200 different items, we wanted to put what happened to the item. So if you're like, oh, I really love that cereal, you know, can I still buy it? We would either say, no, you can't, or maybe yes, but you have to buy it online, or you have to go to, you know, a dollar store or something. So we try and guide people to find their favorites if they want to still find them. A lot of these things have come back. They've made comebacks or they've transformed into some way, and they're back in our world again.
Mm-hmm. Well, why did you decide to single out and celebrate the 90s?
You know, it was obviously the natural thing to do after the 70s and the 80s, and I think that we really weren't sure at first if it was time for the 90s, if people were going to finally remember it. You know, we get a lot of, oh, it's too early, or, oh, I'm trying to forget the 90s. But I think that if you look at them carefully, as we had to, you realize that it was a decade that changed a lot of things permanently. As you said earlier, there are things that you did for the first time in the 90s that you have changed your life. Like you may have sent your first email or you got your first cell phone. Those are things that have changed. Your email account may not be the same. Your phone's going to be a lot smaller, but there'll always be something about that in your life going forward. And the 90s brought that to you and kind of, you know, took you down that path for the first time.
I wonder how many people want to go back in time and give back email.
Oh, yeah.
Constant communication.
It's hard to think about. We talk about in the introduction a little bit about just how different things were. Like, you know, your example of going to the airport and just breezing on through the metal detector an hour before your flight, not worrying if you had, nail clippers or anything with you. It just, so many things have changed. And because they change slowly, you don't realize them. That's why we like to do our books, because people can go, wow, you know, I thought the 90s were nothing time, but really there were a lot of interesting things that, you know, they kind of brought out.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there were things that you even forgot about as you were compiling this list. How did you start to do your research?
Oh, so many things. Yeah, and, you know, we tried to make it a book for everyone in the 90s, not just if you were a kid in the 90s, if you were maybe older and you think, oh, this book isn't for me because I didn't play with toys in the 90s. But it's not a toy book only. It also talks about things that you may have, you know, experienced at your workplace, or, you know, if you were a parent or a family or just a regular person. We kind of tried to reach out to all people. So, you know, we went through and just really tried to make that list and focus on what we wanted to tell people about.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a particularly, fond memory of any product from the 90s?
Oh, man, there are so many. You know, one that stands out to me that I really loved was Mystery Science Theater 3000, which was, of course, in our TV, is one of our TV shows in there. And I think I like that for a bunch of reasons. Obviously, it's hilarious. Those people who do that show are super smart, and I've interviewed them recently. And they've gone on, you know, they're still around. You can watch them, not on Mystery Science anymore unless you have reruns, but Riff Tracks is one of the groups that they've started, and also Cinematic Titanic, which do the same thing, mocking bad movies and bad, like, mental hygiene shorts and that kind of thing. But they're, what they did is something that wasn't, they weren't alone in the 90s doing that. The 90s kind of developed this thing of meta commentary where, you know, they were doing it for bad movies, giving it their own soundtrack, but Beavis and Butthead were doing it for music videos, giving, you know, sometimes terrible music videos a funny commentary. And, you know, Pop-Up Video was doing it with pop-ups, and Talk Soup was doing it with talk show clips. So kind of that meta commentary really developed in the 90s, and it's still around today.
Where do we still find it today? I'm trying to think.
Well, you know, Riff Tracks and Cinematic Titanic do it, obviously. Beavis and Butthead got a return for a while, and they were commenting on things like Jersey Shore and Ultimate Fighting. I think they might have stopped that right now, but they were doing it for a couple seasons, which was pretty funny.
Well, you know, television evolved quite a bit over the 90s as well. As you mentioned, there's the meta commentary, but also we started to see some of the networks try to pave their own path and, as I always saw it, compete for different audiences. So we had ABC going after the wholesome family shows like Family Matters and Full House and those types of things. And then, you know, CBS with trying to get maybe an older audience, Touched by an Angel and those types of things. Are any of those programs and maybe the characters featured in your book?
No, those are good points. Yeah, we have a whole entry on TGIF and SNCC, which were, you know, ABC's TGIF, as you mentioned, had a bunch of the family funny shows like Family Matters and Boy Meets World, which is getting its own kind of comeback show. And then SNCC was Nickelodeon's Saturday night, you know, mix. They had Clarissa Explains It All and Rugrats and a bunch of stuff. And it's so funny because it's different now. We don't, back in the 90s still, it was kind of the last gasp of maybe not everybody had cable. My family certainly didn't for the longest time. But, you know, there was still kind of a limited amount of channels. Now it's harder to make those kind of rock blocks of TV that they used to and go after the audience the same way, because people might watch it on their DVR a week later, or they might watch it on streaming, or, you know, it's, we're not watching that same TV show as everybody on the block is anymore. And, you know, that started even earlier than that, but the 90s really kind of was the last gasp of some of those, hey, we can tell you what to watch on a Saturday night. You can't tell us anymore, network. Mm-hmm. We're going to watch what we want when we want to watch it.
You, I found this interesting. So there was the show Beverly Hills 90210, which I think, I don't know if the revival is still on the air.
Oh, it just ended.
Really? Okay. But you singled out Brenda Walsh in the book.
We did. You know, Brenda was quite the character. And I'm from Minnesota, and my husband's from California, so we were fascinated with the show because it was the whole adjustment of the Midwesterner to this supposedly wilder lifestyle. And you kind of thought Brenda was going to be the good girl. You know, she would kind of have this Midwestern wholesomeness. Well, no, they immediately soaked that show up as fast as they could, and Brenda went, you know, high-volume witchy, which was kind of funny. So she had, there was a zine against her, I Hate Brenda, put out by Darby Romeo of the Ben is Dead zine fame. And just, you know, she, for some reason, got a lot of the hatred. I think part of it was Shannon Doherty was kind of one of those actresses who didn't seem to really care what you thought of her. It's kind of in the Kristen Stewart mold today. You know, she was not your standard starlet, and people reacted to that.
I'm Cynthia Schuster talking with Gail Fashingbauer Cooper. She's the entertainment editor for MSNBC.com and co-author of The Totally Sweet 90s. We're wondering, what are your memories of the 90s? What types of TV shows, bands, books, fashion statements defined that decade for you? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Gail, one of the things that I was looking at, I'm looking at some of these fashion statements from the 1990s, and slap bracelets.
Oh, slap bracelets.
Yeah.
You know, whenever we do a book reading and a signing, we bring a bunch of slap bracelets. And it's so fun because some of the little kids in the audience have never seen them before. And when you lay this thing that looks like a ruler on your wrist, they don't know what you're going to do. And then you need to kind of slap yourself, and it curls up like a octopus grabbing you. I think that's the neatest thing that was ever invented. And that's a Wisconsin product invented by a Wisconsin shop teacher who had these thin sheets of metal. And if found a new use for them.
Really? So, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I do remember them digging into my wrist. The edges would kind of, you know, not cut me, but it would feel that way. And I mentioned jelly shoes at the start of the show.
Oh, yes, jelly shoes. They came over from the 80s, but they were definitely still around. Not a very comfortable or long-lasting choice of footwear, but, you know, fashion.
Why did we spend so much time hurting ourselves wearing these awful things?
I don't know. It's a great question.
And koosh balls and hacky sacks, those became popular, too.
Oh, yes. I mean, people will look at these things and they'll go, you know, these things aren't just 90s things. And that's totally true. I mean, there's no way that you can say, well, on January 1st, 1990, you know, we had a new world. We didn't. Things flowed over from the 80s. Hacky sack was definitely a thing in the 80s that was, you know, on college campuses and in big fields or wherever people want to kind of stand around and do it. But it just seemed to us like it was a very popular 90s thing. So we thought it was 90s enough to include in the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we put a lot of interesting things in our bodies as well in the way of food and drink. Can you give us a brief history on clear cola?
Oh, you bet. Well, the way Brian and I like to think about it is we look back at, like, every decade seemed to want to have a color or a color pattern that they would choose. In the 70s, if you remember, maybe you had an avocado oven or a dark brown refrigerator in your house, and mm-hmm. It was kind of like, the 70s, we're into earth tones, we want to get one with nature. And in the 80s, we kind of rejected that and said, no, we want, you know, Miami Vice, we want pastels, like those buildings on South Beach, and, you know, bright, bright neons. And then in the 90s, it was kind of like they just threw all that out the window and said, oh, we're sick of color. Let's just make everything clear. Let's just no color at all. We're going to go clear. So Crystal Pepsi came out, clear beer, Zima, which is a whole other story in itself. And I think our favorite clear product was the clear trash bags, because really, if you want to get a good look at something, it's going to be a bunch of mashed up garbage.
Yeah, got to do that. You know, clear Pepsi or Crystal Pepsi, I remember us, you know, my family having a big 24-pack of that in the house. And the first sip would taste good to me, and then the rest did not. And I could never figure out why it tasted different after that first drink.
That's exactly right. It had a very different flavor, and then they kind of reformulated it to be more citrusy. I think they thought people were expecting a clear beverage to be more of a citrus, and that didn't really work either. But when I have a Crystal Pepsi little glass bottle, and when I bring it to the readings, everybody always wants to pick it up and touch it because it's just so weird to see. And everyone, of course, remembers the Saturday Night Live spoof commercial for Crystal Gravy, which has Kevin Nealon. He's in the shower and he's putting Crystal Gravy on his face, and it's the perfect spoof for that weird little era when everything had to be crystal or clear.
Hmm. Do you see similar trends now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they come and they go. Like, all of a sudden, everything's Angry Birds, or everything is, you know, these are real more specific than the Crystal Pepsi, but, you know, everything, Monsters University is like everywhere, or, you know, for a while we all have to have a certain flavor of this or a certain, you know, kind of energy drinks were a thing that were super popular. And then they have their fad, and some of them last, and some people really like them and try and keep them around, and some just come and go with the wind. I mean, that's the point of our book, is a lot of these things you're like, oh, yeah, that was a weird time. Why were we obsessed with the Macarena?
Right. I asked our producer, Rhonda, to get that song, and she ran away from her desk.
Yeah.
To chase her and say, no, no, no.
A good idea. Although it always helps me remember when my friend Julie was married, because we did it at her wedding, and it had to be either 95 or 96, because that's when it was at everybody's wedding.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
yeah.
That I can get her anniversary card right, get the year right on that for her.
Our guest is Gail Faschingbauer Cooper, entertainment editor for MSNBC.com and co-author of The Totally Sweet 90s, From Clear Cola to Furby and Grunge to Whatever, The Toys, Tastes, and Trends That Defined a Decade. We wanted to have a little fun here, Gail, and I guess pose a little trivia question to our listeners. And what we'll do is, it's going to be called Name That TV Theme Song. So I'm going to go out to break by playing a TV theme song. It won't be entirely obvious what show it's for, but if you know, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You'll give your answer to Rhonda Fanning, and the first person to get the answer right will win a fabulous prize. Play that for you coming up next. So take a listen. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Don't know about the future. That's anybody.
Well, just before the break, we played this TV theme song from the 1990s. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And the question we posed to our listeners was, what show was this theme song for? Gail, do you know?
Oh, of course. Should I say?
Yes, you may say.
Oh, it's got to be Blossom, right? That's Dr. John.
That's right. It is. Yeah. It is Blossom. And I was trying to place that singer's voice, so thank you. That answers my question.
Yeah. Oh, he's awesome.
So we have a winner. Tim in Janesville called in. He was the first to get it right and answer correctly. So we're going to send him a copy of your book, Gail, The Totally Sweet 90s.
Oh, fabulous. You know, Blossom is in there. She was the most fashionable person ever to wear a sunflower hat.
Yeah. And those, I had one. I had to have one. I loved Blossom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And how long did that fashion hang around before it kind of made way for a new one?
Oh, man, I like to think that died the day the show was canceled. But, you know, it's not true because every once in a while, stuff comes back. I mean, I was looking at a current copy of Allure magazine the other day, and they have a giant ad for colored mascara, which is kind of a late 80s, mid to late 80s, early 90s thing. And I'm like, colored mascara? We're doing that again? Hmm. So sunflower hats will have their time. They haven't gone far, I'm sure.
Well, a lot of things spun out of Blossom. One, in particular, is Joey Lawrence. He kind of emerged as a singer, even.
Oh, yes, Joey. Whoa. Yeah. Joey Lawrence. He was awesome. Yeah, and, you know, the star of Blossom is still around. She does a lot on parenting. She speaks out a lot. I think she's into attachment parenting and is very vocal and writes columns about her children and that kind of thing. So she hasn't really gone away either.
And I happen to know that she's coming out with a vegan cookbook, I believe, in the fall. So we're going to try to get her on Wisconsin Public Radio when that comes out, too.
Oh, yeah. I think she'll be great.
Well, if you have any questions, any comments and memories of the 1990s, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. If you're near your Twitter account, you can tweet us at KDunnShow. Dunn is spelled with two N's. We're going to take a call from Olivia in Madison. Hi, Olivia.
Hi, thanks for having me. Great show.
Thank you. Yep, I can hear you. So what are your best memories of the 1990s?
Yeah, I grew up, I was born in 1985 and had a great childhood growing up in the 90s. And I'll just make a general comment. I have some iconic things that represent the 90s that stick with me even today. And the first one is the Babysitter's Club book series. I love those. I was
love that. That's in our book. Yes. That's an awesome icon of the 90s.
I was convinced I would have a daughter someday named Claudia or Dawn, one of the two. and then the other things about the 90s, do you remember Skip It?
Yes, Skip It's in our book as well. Skip It is great.
Yeah, we used to have Skip It races at recess. And, you know, great physical activity for kids, although the ankles were a little raw after that. And then the last one was Polly Pocket, which
Polly Pocket, yeah. They are actually not in the book, but they certainly were a part of the 90s, and my five-year-old likes to buy them today. They are still around. And
they are.
New ones. Oh, yeah, that's a big thing.
And they're choking hazards.
Yeah, definitely choking hazards. You got to watch for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, those are great 90s memories. I just love the Babysitter's Club books. They were so kind of sweet, and you always thought you could get your friends together and do that same thing, but, you know, it never really worked out like it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you for that call, Olivia. I remember Skip It's as well, and you even likened them in your book to, a plastic version of the restraining device used on prisoners.
Yes. You know, for people who are like, what is this Skip It? If you're in the 80s or the 70s, we had lemon twists, which were the same mm-hmm. thing. There was like a little circlet, and it's plastic. It goes around your ankle. And then there's, you know, in lemon twist was a lemon, and Skip It was another thing. And you lift your foot up, and you skip it around yourself. So it's like you're jump roping with one leg, and no one's turning the rope for you. You're kind of jumping this thing all the time. And it's pretty cool. It's like you have a leash on your foot, and you're jumping over a little plastic ball. But for some reason, we loved it.
My grandma had one of those lemon twisters, and I remember her asking me once, why do you need a Skip It? We already have this lemon thing hanging in the garage. And I said, it doesn't have one of those counters on it.
that's
not going to count
about
itself.
Skip it. You know, so many of the things in our 90s book added a technological element to them that the 80s and 70s toys didn't have. Skip It was obviously one of them. And, you know, we have a lot of talking toys in this book and technologically toys with computer chips and things in that we didn't have in the old days. Mm-hmm. The old days, the 80s.
Don't say that.
Yeah. No kidding.
Ben in Milwaukee. Hi, Ben.
Hi, great show. I just wanted to comment on how so many franchises started in the 90s that are still going on today. Like, I believe Kevin Smith started with Clerks in the 90s. And I remember when Pokemon first started in the 90s, and they're still making movies about that. And Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was in the 90s, and they're still making Power
Rangers. Totally. Those are all,
and
you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which may have started in the late 80s, but really bloomed in the 90s. Again, it's got a big comeback. Those are all, you know, Kevin Smith, Clerks is in our book, Pokemon. Those are great examples.
Will Smith got his career really started in the 90s, and the 90s was like an egg where so many great things just hatched from and just refused to die. The Land Before Time movies, I think they're on number 40-something now.
Totally, yeah. You know, the rise of the Disney princess also, when you think of movies, really started in the 90s when they kind of went back, Disney went back to the well and started making new princess movies. And my gosh, those princesses will never go away now. They're on kids' sheets and lunchboxes and all that kind of stuff. I really think the 90s are underrated.
Right. To this day, I still occasionally break out my old Game Boy and pop in a Pokemon Red Game Boy game. I could kill 12 hours easily without even trying.
Oh, yeah, totally. We also have the Oregon Trail in our book, which is just, to me, like one of the epitome of one of the earliest computer games that before we even knew what you could do, we would play this game and ford the river with our oxen.
Right. So is Game Boy in your list, too?
Yeah, is Game Boy in our book? That's a great question. I think Super Nintendo might be.
Mm.
But, you know, we kind of, Game Boy's in here. Brian wrote this entry now,
okay.
I remember. Oh, yes. And then Game Boy Camera came along in 98, which was like the smallest digital camera you could have.
Well, it's interesting that that he brings up Game Boy and even Oregon Trail because, you know, these days video games are much more sophisticated, 3D, interactive with other people from around the world even. Why do we still turn back to the basics like Game Boy?
Oh, I know. And, you know, there's so many, too. Like, retro arcades are coming out where you could go to an arcade and, you know, they may have the most modern fighting violent game, but they'll also have Ms. Pac-Man, you know. So you can – there's something about that innocence. It's either that it reminds you of when you were kind of innocent and childlike, or it's just simply good fun. You know, sometimes you don't want to rip someone's spine out through their skull in Mortal Kombat. You just want to chase the little, you know, ghosts around and eat them. I mean, Wreck-It Ralph, which is one of my daughter's favorite movies, is so wonderful for that because it really plays back at that retro technology, and you just go, it makes you want to go out of there and go play some of those, play an old game of Tetris or play an old game of Ms. Pac-Man for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an early advertisement for cell phones. Let's take a listen.
Finding a phone in a car isn't that unusual anymore, except when it leaves the car for greener pastures, the high seas, or a leisurely lunch. Radio Shack keeps you in constant communication with their affordable, transportable cellular telephone.
Hello?
So,
we have a very large cell phone that we haul around to our book readings and stuff, and people always want to come pick it up because, you know, it really wasn't that long ago, but they can't remember that these phones were like the size of giant bricks and that we actually hauled them from place to place and talked on them.
And I call them Zach Morris cell phones.
Yes, and we mentioned that. We talk about Zach Morris, of course, Saved by the Bell, and that's a 90s classic, and had about the biggest phone you could have. And there's a whole website that's called ZachMorrisCellPhone.com just devoted to his phone. It's pretty funny.
And he kept it in his back pocket and managed never to get a backache from sitting on it so much.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how you could do that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That thing is enormous. Even the one we haul around, which is smaller than Zach, I just I used to carry this around with me.
Speaking of Saved by the Bell, we tried to get a clip of that infamous scene where Jesse Spano has a little meltdown after becoming dependent on energy pills or something like that.
Caffeine pills.
Caffeine pills, that's what it was. But we couldn't find a clean cut of it because it's been remixed so many times.
Oh,
the internet has run out of the original version. So.
That is so funny. You know, at our we had a little 90s book launch party, and one of the teachers from Saved by the Bell came, and he was signing pictures of himself, and we were all... asking him. That's the episode that everyone comes up to him and wants to know about. What about Jesse and
Jesse? Really? Was it Mr. Tuttle or
no? It was Mr. Dewey, the math
teacher.
Patrick Thomas O'Brien. He's an actor in Minnesota these days and raising a family, and it's just the nicest guy in the world. And we had to, and of course, he was on Gilmore Girls too, which was a great '90s show. So, lots and lots of memories.
Our guest is Gail Rashingbauer Cooper, entertainment editor for MSNBC.com and co-author of The Totally Sweet 90s, From Clear Cola to Furby and Grunge to Whatever, The Toys, Tastes, and Trends That Defined a Decade. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. And speaking of Furby, let's talk to Jim in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I was just wondering how the resurgence of Furby did. I believe it was last Christmas season. I noticed the price had really gone up astronomically. They were all about $50 to $60. I don't think they were that much originally. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Jim.
Is that not crazy? He's exactly right. Furby is like twice as expensive. There's like an iPhone app and all this kind of thing. They also have these really little ones. They're smaller. We have one of the regular ones, the old ones that we take along on our book tour, but that they're now small. So some smaller ones, you know, pricey and just so weird. I think they did pretty well, though. I heard from a lot of people, just word of mouth, that that was the present that their, you know, kid wanted for Christmas. They wanted a Furby. How they, you know, whether it was advertising or word of mouth from other little friends, everything old is new again, and Furby's back. McDonald's had Furby toys for a while. I think they did pretty well.
What was appealing about Furby? Remind me what it did. It was
like
one of the more...
It's like a little robot. It looks kind of like a hamster that maybe mated with an owl or something else fuzzy, and it speaks Furbish when you first get it, which is kind of its own little gibberish, but then it's programmed to kind of start, like, understanding you, so it starts to work English into its language, which I don't know. This is most, somebody must have been smoking something funny when they sat in a room and decided this is the toy they are going to make. But it's just an icon of the 90s, and people always love to come up and touch it when we have it at a book reading and remember it. It looked a lot like Gizmo from Gremlins.
Yeah.
And then they were sued because he looked a little too much like Gizmo from Gremlins, and supposedly there was a $1 million-plus payout in that lawsuit because, they kind of ripped that off.
Well, here's another iconic toy of the 90s.
Face it, you're either on one end of a Nerf weapon or the other. Time to choose. So you better think about getting yourself a bow and arrow or a Nerf missile storm. Excuse me, don't you just love this?
So... Nerf came out with a long line of products. I think it started with just a football. Is that right?
Nerf, yes. I interviewed the inventor of Nerf a long time ago. And, it was, I want to say football or foam ball was the first one. It was kind of like play indoor volleyball kind of thing. And they decided they didn't want the volleyball game. They just wanted the ball. They wanted that foam thing that couldn't really hurt too much stuff. And then, it totally developed. And what we have in the 90s book is Nerf guns. So you could load them with the little foam projectiles and shoot your brother.
I'm sure the parents loved that.
Every decade has its way to beat up on random kids, whether they're in your family or at the playground. And we had some stuff in the 70s and 80s book, too. Lawn darts were one when they used to be sharp and you could actually stab somebody right through the foot. And then they got a little smarter and made them softer so you wouldn't actually... Took all the fun out of it.
Yeah. Well, we got an email from Alfred, who remembers gummy bears, the candy, and the cartoon. He also wanted to point out that that I believe he sent the message from his Dick Tracy wrist radio.
Awesome.
So
very cool. Yeah, gummy became kind of a thing. I almost want to say it was late 80s, but late 80s into the 90s, where suddenly everything gummy developed, and then the gummy bears cartoon. Again, it was kind of like late 80s, 90s, overlapped a little bit, but they had their own cartoon, which is just a weird little Disney thing with happy little gummy bears living in the woods. They all had names, goofy names like Tummy Gummy and Cubby Gummy.
I like the theme song. It gets stuck in my head from time to time, even to this day.
Oh, the gummy bears theme song.
Awesome. I wish I had it. We could play it for you. But
yeah, and another weird candy trend in the 90s to go along with gummy, if people remember, sour candy really kind of exploded in the 90s, like atomic warheads, and there would be kids would dare you to, like, can you hold this thing in your mouth? And, you know, the super sour powder would eventually wear off, and then it would just become something kind of, you know, quiet and gentle. We say it's kind of like the Ozzy Osbourne of candies. It starts out really shocking, and then it just becomes your grandpa.
Well, the subtitle of your book that I've been reading a couple of times, I've been trying to, I guess, emphasize the word whatever, because it is in quotation marks, which we can't see over the radio.
Totally.
I imagine you're trying to highlight the fact that for a time that became a common expression.
Absolutely. You know, the 80s equivalent for our book, probably Valley Girl Speak or something like that, where Gag Me with a Spoon and all that was popular. But in the 90s, we just kind of got very blasé and dismissive and whatever. And we in the entry in our book, we point out that it's kind of hard to respond to. You know, your mom or dad can tell you, don't say that to me. But, you know, it's hard for, like, your friend to come up with a snappy response to a whatever. It was kind of the ultimate conversation slammer, just slams your conversation down. And we point out that it was voted the most annoying word in the English language for 3 years in a row by a certain poll, which, yeah, there's a lot of competition, so good for whatever.
In what other ways did our language evolve in the 90s?
Oh, man. You know, I think so much of it would have to be probably tech-based again. You know, the way that we learned things like Windows 95 or just weird terms. We have a great entry in here on, they made this little PSA called Don't Copy That Floppy, to try and encourage people not to pirate games back when you actually bought them on discs and not on your, you know, your smartphone. And just the word floppy as a noun, that's a really strange, you know, we're used to that thing, oh, like that puppy has floppy ears.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, as technology dictated, floppy became something you understood to be shorthand for a floppy disk. And floppy disks, of course, are also in our book because, man, you don't see those too much anymore. But it used to be you had to worry, did I get the 5 1/4 for my game? But I really need the 3 1/2. It was just, for a while there, the transition through the 90s was funny. Things changed so quickly, and you really had to stay up with things, or, you know, you would end up buying the wrong copy of Leisure Suit Larry at Software, et cetera, and bringing it home and going, I can't play this. This doesn't work on my computer. So, yeah, I think the language probably the tech rollover, but that's a great question.
We're talking with Gail Faschingbauer Cooper, entertainment editor for MSNBC.com and co-author of The Totally Sweet 90s, from Clear Cola to Furby and Grunge to Whatever, the toys, tastes, and trends that defined a decade. What about you? What makes you nostalgic about the 1990s? You can tell us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, or find us on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Remember Hanson? No, wait, how could you forget Hanson? Believe it or not, they're still going strong, taking Mbop around the country on tour, albeit in a different and perhaps much lower key. I'm Cynthia Schuster, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And this hour, we're talking about the music, fads, and more that made the 1990s the 1990s. Our guest is Gail Faschingbauer Cooper, and she's entertainment editor for MSNBC.com, co-author of The Totally Sweet 90s. Gail, has popular music gotten any better since Mbop?
Well, some people really loved that. It's obvious that Hanson is still touring and performing. And they actually had a beer come out called Hop, which was, yeah, real cute.
Really?
First time you heard it, got less funny, as Homer Simpson said, every time you heard it after that. You know, the 90s were a funny time for music. It was an adventurous decade in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously you can't talk about it without talking about grunge and how important that was to music and still is today. The East Coast, West Coast rap feud was big for a lot of people. And, you know, the boy bands were huge and are making a comeback. There's just so many ways that the 90s influence on music is still with us today.
Well, bookending the 90s in terms of boy bands, I believe we had New Kids on the Block at the front end, and then NSYNC and Backstreet Boys toward the latter end of the decade. Was there much evolution between the two, or would you say that they were pretty much the same in terms of the marketing, the music, et cetera?
So they had their own individual ways of doing it, obviously. You know, if you're a Boys to Men fan or you're a Backstreet Boys fan, you don't think that the other band can even come near to yours. But the interesting thing was that they were all kind of non-threatening. They were all like good locker wallpaper. You know, you could put a poster up and the girls would always choose, you know, oh, I like Joey or I like Jordan or whatever. It was kind of that kickback to what their moms might have done by saying, you know, I'm a Paul girl or I'm a Ringo girl or, you know, maybe it was a Monkees that mm-hmm. they picked. It was kind of a long line going through, well, girls like non-threatening, cute guys who sing, you know, harmonies, and here we've got a whole bunch of new ones.
Yeah. Well, 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call, and we only have a few minutes left with Gail, so let's take some calls. We've got April in Wauwatosa. Hi, April.
Hi. A couple of things actually came to mind. I'm a typical 90s kid. I really miss that decade, but I remember being terrorized by the boys with Super Soakers.
Yeah, totally. That's a great one.
The second thing was the movie Clueless, I think, is the quintessential 90s movie.
That is a great one. That is another one and spawned a show. And, you know, people still refer to that. People still quote that. That was definitely a 90s classic.
Well, and I'm wondering if terms like whatever came from that movie or were they around before that?
I think whatever is pretty old, but there mm-hmm. certainly were some great lines in Clueless that stood out. And just the whole kind of the fashion of Clueless was a fun one. And I mean, that was a true classic. You know, there were bigger films. Titanic is probably the biggest film of the 90s, or, you know, The Phantom Menace, which was awful. But Clueless was just a very fun one that hit the zeitgeist of the decade really well.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Stephanie in Madison. Hi, Stephanie.
Oh, hi, guys. What a great show. You know, my reaction at first was, 90s, huh? But, you know, the 90s, I became a grandma, and a very young grandma at 43 then. My daughter is 22, and two grandkids who are, one is a sophomore in college, and the other one is they're basically grown, and spring back so many sweet memories. Love the Teletubbies. My little grandson at the time loved the Teletubbies. We all loved and watched Beavis and Butthead. We'd laugh ourselves sick at Beavis and Butthead.
Wasn't that great? That was so hilarious.
Oh, it was hysterical. And I remember, you know, the music, I think, was it Paul, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? Was that Paul Cole? Was that 90s or was that 80s?
That's a great one, too. I want to say it's 90s. I'd have to look it up for sure. But,
yep,
and you
yep. In the Wild, Wild West.
Kids shows. You bring up Teletubbies,
living
that's
in the,
a great one. Blue's Clues, Barney, lots.
I'm sorry, Gail, could you repeat that?
Oh, I was just saying, if you brought up Teletubbies, I wonder if your grandkids also maybe watched Barney or Blue's Clues.
Oh, my, not as much.
Yeah.
I love the Teletubbies. And the worst phrase, though, been there, done that. Oh, that is just, and it's still being used, and it's so obnoxious.
Yep, and also not from Wayne's World.
Oh, my God, yes.
Not on the end of every sentence to make it negative. That was a big one from the 90s.
That's right.
Oh, God, yes, yes. But I'll hang up and let other folks get on. This is just...
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Well, and when we mentioned Teletubbies and Barney, I also remembered you have Lamb Chop in your book.
We do. Lamb Chop, which, you know, love Sherry Lewis. Love mm-hmm. Sherry Lewis so much. She was a 60s and 70s memory for a lot of us. And then in the 90s, came back just for the last sad 5 years of her life. She died in 97, but she had a wonderful show with very catchy songs. The song that never ends, you might remember.
Yes.
It just goes on and on, my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Lamb Chop and her favorite puppets were back, and it was just wonderful.
And Tom in Cedarburg is waiting. Hi, Tom.
Hello. I would put out cell phones. Definitely changed my life and a lot of people's. But I'd like to also mention, I feel it was a happier, freer time. There were some negatives, too. I think political correctness really, really got a hold on. But really, in general, it was your pre-9/11. It was just a freer, happier time for most American people. And I think for the working person, it was a lot better time, too. There was more opportunity for, you know, jobs that would pay a living wage, you know, versus today, and especially the way we're heading and the way politics have gone. It's gotten so radicalized.
It definitely was a different time. You know, we think of the 80s as being like the height of, you know, great economy and Wall Street and everything, but the 90s kind of flowed from that. And, you know, it was the airport thing and just being pre-911 and kind of not having that realization of a lot of the things that we know about now, there definitely was an innocence to the 90s, and I think people forget that. You know, you're smart enough to remember that it did feel, things felt different, you know, and the technology being a little less part of our lives also helped it feel a lot different, I think.
Do you think that that's true of every decade and every generation? How much of that is reality and how much of that is just a sense of nostalgia and kind of missing the past?
It's a really good way to put it, because obviously there's always going to be nostalgia. You know, our kids who are looking back, you know, 20 years from now on this decade, they'll be like, oh yeah, remember before the Terminators roamed the sidewalks, how innocent we felt, you know, or something. There'll be some, mm-hmm. Remember before the government had brain chips in all our heads, and it was great. You know, but you really, there is something about the 90s, and you can't look past that, you know, a year and a half after they were over, we just spun into a whole new world of you know, terrorism fears and airport security changes and just that touched everything. And, you know, we can't pretend that it's just nostalgia, because it's not. Things physically change for us.
Hmm. Do you think 10 years from now, as people look back on the first, or actually, if you were to look back on the first decade of the 2000s, what types of things would stand out, much like the things in your book on the 90s?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's going to be, it will be a fun book if we do a 2000s book. I think, you know, a lot of it, like this book, a lot of it will be kind of the ethereal things that come and go, like, you know, this would be the 2010s, but, you know, Gangnam Style might be in a new book, or the Angry Birds. I always come back to that because that seemed to be such a huge development. Smartphones and apps, just the constant presence of that will definitely be a part of it. But, you know, there'll be broader things, too. You know, the complete dissolving of landlines, the complete, you know, people feeling like they don't. I just read an interesting story the other day about how younger kids are getting so less into the movie theater experience because they've been raised with the sense that they can watch a movie on their huge TV at home. They can watch it whenever they want with as many friends over as they want. You know, they can talk and text through it, which you better not do in my movie theater if you know what's good for you. Whereas, you know, going to the movie theater is not maybe going to be that wonderful velvet curtain experience, you know. And even for those of us who didn't have the 50s movie palace experience, you know, the mall multiplex was still a fun place to go. But maybe they won't even care to do that. New generations set their own paths and decide where they're going to take popular culture.
Well, Thomas from Eau Claire emailed us. He says, I remember the 90s as a time when it seemed as though you had to upgrade your computer every 6 months because technology was developing so fast.
Yes, it is totally true. And one of my favorite entries in our book is about the Windows 95 guide that came out when they had Rachel from Friends, and I think it was Chandler from Friends, trying to show you how to use it. Oh my gosh, you need to watch that on YouTube because it's just the funniest thing. You know, she gets all confused about the space bar and whether it has nougat in it, and it's just like, were we really ever that?
Yeah.
That clueless, to take another 90s movie title, but man, I mean, yeah, the technology. I think, too, it's hard because there are people who, you know, my dad never sent an email in his working life, and now there are people who kind of, that transition was hard for them, or it's still hard for them. Maybe they were home with kids for a while and now trying to get back into a world where the technology has moved on so far that you wonder how you're ever going to get caught up, because it's just, you know, the learning curve is very steep.
This might be too specific, but is dial-up internet in your book?
You know, dial-up internet kind of imbues our book in the sense that when we talk about that early tech, you certainly can hear that sound and remember how slow things were. We didn't give an entry just to it, but we do talk about online services like Prodigy and CompuServe and Genie, and how before there was the internet, these were kind of the training wheels of the internet where you could only mix with other people who are other members of that service, but it was kind of teaching you about what was coming down the pike.
Hmm. Brian in Fall River, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon. The 90s were like a box of chocolate.
That's a good 90s movie.
Yes, it was. It was probably the quintessential 90s movie.
Right up there. Right up there. That's a good one. And he was a great 90s actor. He's still a great actor, but he did a lot of his great work in the 90s. Tom Hanks, they're talking about, of course.
Right, right. And Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
And that is interesting, because Forrest Gump was, I guess you might say, the film version of your book, if your book were written about the 60s and 70s, or maybe just the 70s.
Oh, definitely. You mean it was kind of so vignette-y, like, hey, we're going to go to, you know, this particular event. And, hey, now we're going to jump to this particular event.
Yeah, he just happened to be everywhere.
Yes.
Of significance.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, looking ahead, I guess, over the next decade, what do you think will stand out about this decade in particular?
You know, we talked about a little bit of it. I mean, obviously the technology is going to continue to be a huge part. The viralness of things like viral videos, how they go crazy, or, you know, the cat obsession on the internet, you know, with the cat videos and the cat BuzzFeed silly pictures and memes. That's got to be a huge part of it, just because so many of us spend so many hours in front of screens these days that will definitely be a part of it. But I'm hoping that there'll be just some flat-out goofiness. Some of my favorite parts of both of our books have been, like, the really weird soda or cereal that was there for, like, 2 years and was gone, but you remember it so vividly. You're like, hey, Urkel O's. Oh, my gosh, I thought no one remembered that but me. Or, you know, Surge Soda or Orbitz with the little gelatin balls floating in the drink. Oh, someone else remembers that, too. That's one of the things about our books that we just want people to pick it up and go, like, you know, I'm not the only one. People remember that and maybe see a picture of it or get some facts about it and just kind of laugh and remember your own experiences with it.
Mm-hmm. I forgot to read this Facebook comment from Jamie Lynn. She says, Nine Inch Nails and bands of that ilk became the end-all be-all for her. It started with the grunge movement and then gravitated toward the heavy stuff like Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, you know, that's a lot of people kind of found bands that in the old days might not have gotten much of a chance to make it. A lot of the grunge bands, you know, Kurt Cobain famously says how people wearing Nirvana shirts were the people, some of them who used to beat him up in high school. It was the kids who were considered the oddballs. It got their own way. And Nine Inch Nails, in a way, was for a very specific audience who might not have felt in with what was the number one song on the charts that day, but they found their own music that appealed to them.
And then, I mean, ironically, then, that kind of became a mainstream movement in a way. And I'm thinking too about, we have a clip here of the song Smells Like Teen Spirit,
right?
And I'll just play a little bit of that to refresh our memories. Why do you think that stood out?
Well, you know, grunge and also Riot Girl, which was another kind of both musical and social trend, it kind of showed the 90s that, you know, the kids that maybe felt misunderstood could really express themselves, whether it was through starting a band in your garage and getting your friends together or doing a zine that you might take to Kinko's. You know, now they'd be on the internet or on your webpage. But there were a lot of outlets that suddenly emerged. Sassy Magazine was one of my favorite 90s things, and that really encouraged girls particularly to do, you know, to be yourself, to not have to be the cheerleader if that wasn't what you were. You're not worried about, you know, 17 Magazine telling you to buy the right mascara, but to express your opinion on things that matter to you. And grunge did that in its lyrics and also in the way that the people in its band were not typical stars, I think. And Riot Girl kind of took that to women in a way.
Do you think that the fast-paced, high-tech nature of current decade is impacting the way that we experience pop culture, fashion, and all these things? Do you think we're going to have the same sense of nostalgia going forward?
I think we'll always have that sense of nostalgia because, you know, what surrounds you and what you grow up with will always kind of bring back those memories, whether they're happy or maybe somewhat wistful in a way. But yeah, it's going to be different. It'll be interesting how it's different. I wonder, you know, what my 5-year-old will look back on fondly, what she'll remember. And I just look at the things she comes into contact with daily and think how different they are than when I was growing up. You just walk into like a bathroom at the mall and the water comes on automatically and the air dryer might come on automatically or the paper towels might shoot down when you wave your hands in the air. It's very Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't, you know, I don't even know how do I tell her how to turn the water on? Well, you kind of wave your hands around and look for some kind of a symbol. You know, it's some of us parents are like, well, we're not really prepared to raise kids in this era because we just turn the water on manually.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us today and helping us revive the 90s for a little bit.
Oh, thanks. It was a lot of fun.
Our guest was Gail Faschingbauer Cooper, entertainment editor for MSNBC.com and co-author of The Totally Sweet 90s, From Clear Cola to Furby and Grunge to Whatever, The Toys, Tastes, and Trends That Defined a Decade. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing this program. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network.